Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Butchery.
Tonight's episode is all about the lore surrounding pregnancy and childbirth.
We'll be talking about old wives' tales and midwives' tales.
Stay tuned. Hello, Lane.
Hello.
How are you?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Very good. I am not pregnant.
No, you're not. But you're moving soon. That's a big life change, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we haven't talked about that on the show.
You tweeted it, didn't you?
I did tweet it, and I put it up on Facebook.
I wasn't sure if I just let your news out of the proverbial bag.
No, but I haven't mentioned it on the show, and I know there are people who just listen to the show. And this, I mean, it may impact the show, so I'll mention it briefly here.
Yes.
So, the fall's going to be kind of busy for all of us.
Just a little.
Lane will be having a baby, which is big-ish.
Let's hope it's not too big.
The life event is big, not that the baby will play football coming out of the womb, you know. So I have some news. I have gotten into a PhD program. I'll be moving to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, or the area just around there, come August, September-ish. All right, Beaker.
That was my, that's how Kuzco cries in,
Yes, in, Emperor's New Groove.
Yes, and that's how I fake cry all the time now. But I really am sad. It'll be sad for you guys to move.
That'll be super sad. I mean, you know.
For me. It'll be great for you guys.
Well, I mean, and our paths shall meet again. So I'm not worried about like losing touch or anything like that.
No, I'm not either.
It's funny. Like you and I, like became very fast friends after knowing each other a very brief amount of time, and so now it's sort of like we've known each other forever. So I don't expect us to like disconnect just because I'm moving, 10 hours away.
Yeah, it's an excuse to come up to visit to cross the Mason-Dixon.
It is. Just barely. We won't be that far from the Maryland border, and Maryland is apparently a southern state, so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't fight that battle anymore because quite frankly,
I'm not even gonna comment.
Maryland has Edgar Allan Poe, and I kind of want to claim him as a southern author, so.
Oh, yeah. I'm kind of down with that.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, we'll do that. Yeah. Poe, southern author, done. Check. Stamp on that. So that's big life change coming up. I don't know the impact for the show for that, same as I'm sure Lane does not know the impact for the show with the baby.
No, I mean, we may have to hiatus for a few months, but
yes,
I can't see it being that. I mean, because we make time, we usually do this late at night. We're already used to recording while Skyping.
Right.
That won't change no matter where we are.
Right.
I just worry about, like, your workload, and obviously,
You're
having to juggle family while then I will have to juggle a baby,
Right, your workload, as it were. So,
do what?
Your workload, as it were.
Yeah.
So, but
we'll, we'll keep y'all updated and...
Yeah. Whatever we wind up doing, I imagine by July or so, we'll have a pretty good idea of, if there's a hiatus, how long will the hiatus be, in theory, so we'll be able to convey that to everybody. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook if you can, because I know that that's the easiest way for us to disseminate that news.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll also try to make show announcements, things like that, too. So, I would imagine that we'll probably, even if we take a hiatus from, August through the end of the year, which is a possibility, I imagine that I would still do at least one or more storytelling episodes in October, and we probably would still do something around the holiday season, too.
Right.
Because we've generally done that every year, so...
It's tradition.
So we probably would do at least a little bit in that vein. And then, maybe come back full-fledged next year, if that's what winds up happening. Or maybe there's no gap at all. I have no idea, so...
We just have to play it by ear, but we did want to keep y'all updated and...
Exactly.
Let you know that times are changing.
Yep. Wanted to keep everyone abreast of the situation. Speaking of abreast, lactation, pregnancy.
That was a nice segue there.
That was a terrible segue, but thank you. Thank you for that.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so we, in the course of my pregnancy, I have been kind of fascinated with old wives' tales and gender predicting, and I really thought it would be fun to talk about, because we've done, you know, omens and stuff like that before, but we've never done it so highly focused on one topic, except for maybe, like, a weather episode.
Yeah.
So this one we're going to talk about all, you know, like, the old wives' tales for... Oh, are you carrying high or low? Or, oh, you know, how sick have you been? And, like, some of the newer ones, too. Like, there's a Drano test. There's one you can buy in Walgreens that we're going to talk about. So, yeah, I'm excited.
All right. Well, let's dive in. Where do you want to start?
I guess, I mean, we both kind of compiled a list. We can kind of...
Yeah. I think let's start, like, just straight up in the gender prediction. We've got stuff that's going to go a little beyond that, too.
Yes.
Oh, and yeah. At the very outset, okay, let me just really, really quickly...
Oh, yeah, we should do this.
Say, one, we are not medical doctors. We're not medical professionals. We are not licensed to treat, administer medicine, do a rain dance for anybody. So don't take anything you hear here as medical advice. This is folklore. This is... for, you know, interesting entertainment, education, that's fine. It's cultural context, but this is not medical advice from us. We are not giving this as medical advice. Do you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. And
I think everyone who does these or says these, for the most part, knows that they are not 100% accurate. Because here's the thing. Boy or girl, for the most part, there can be, you know, some oddities. There can be, like, you know, an XXY,
mm-hmm.
you know, born, whatever. All I'm saying is, most people know you're going to have a 50% chance of getting it right. So,
right.
You know, I think taking this with a huge grain of salt is fine. It's just, it's something fun for us to do. And, you know, at the same time, it's interesting exploring that folklore and, you know, wondering why they persisted for so long, and we don't necessarily have the answer for that, but I just think it's fun.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly kind of the angle we want to take on this, and which I also want to say, we are not, I feel like I'm very aware that this is a topic that can be very contentious. I think a lot of things having to do with childbirth and really anything having to do with children and pregnancy, fertility, anything like that. We're not really going to get into fertility at all, because that's just such a big topic that'll be kind of another show, I think, somewhere down the line. But even just focusing on the childbirth pregnancy aspect of it, everyone has an opinion, everybody has, you know, ideas, beliefs, you know, scientific studies, etc., focused on X, Y, or Z about pregnancy and childbirth. Nothing that we're going to say in this episode is intended to be demeaning of anybody's beliefs. Is not intended to be derogatory. I think we're going to try and approach this from a perspective of, you know, isn't that interesting, and respectfulness, but, you know, we're not saying anybody is right or wrong or anything having to do with this folklore. It's just folklore that we want to present and talk about and kind of explore our own opinions and feelings on it.
Right, and because I don't know yet, I won't find out for a while now, so I kind of want to see which one's right and which ones aren't, you know?
Yeah. Right. And I mean, and even in that case, you know, it's still like, you know, which ones are right and which ones are wrong. It's still all a 50-50 chance for you, too, so...
Exactly. Well, and the ones that are right for me weren't necessarily the ones that were right for your wife, you know?
Correct, right.
And I'm sure that she had different things for each pregnancy, you know, that contradicted each other.
Yeah, I think the only real test that I administered, I guess we can go ahead and start talking about the different actual tests and whatnot. The only test I remember administering was the ring test,
mm-hmm.
where you take the wedding ring and you suspend it on a strand of the wife's hair over the palm, and if it moves, I believe if it moves backwards and forwards, it's a boy. If it moves in a circle, it's a girl.
Okay, see, that's what I've heard, but the research that I've done suggests differently, is that the line, like the back and forth, is the girl, and the circle is the boy, which is counterintuitive to me, because I think in symbols, and, you know, the line is very suggestive, and the circle is very suggestive.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that makes me think. But then there's also the key test, and this is for someone who doesn't know about the key test, who is pregnant, so it's kind of hard to, like, you can't do it on yourself. Like, a friend is supposed to, like, have a key laying out and have a pregnant woman pick it up. If she picks it up by the circle, it's a boy. If she picks it up by the, like, the part that you insert into the lock, it's a girl. Again, I would think it would be the opposite, but I don't know. That's the thing with some of these old wives' tales, is they've gotten kind of mixed up, and people kind of say it's one way or it's the other, and it ends up kind of diluting the whole thing.
Right, because, again, none of this is being done as an empirical scientific study, so there's right. It's not like you have all these test cases where people have gone in and done these things over and over again under empirical,
That'd
testing
be pretty
circumstances.
Cool to do, though.
It would be. I think it would be really interesting to see, like, is there any validity to it? And I'm sure maybe there have been a few studies done, but at any rate, it's not something that gets a lot of scientific treatment, and therefore there's not a lot of data to back it up. It's all anecdotal. Which is what all of this winds up being, is very anecdotal, which is fine. Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of folklore is, and that's something I love about it. But so you wind up with, these tests, and people have varying opinions on what's right and what's not. With the ring test, I would think that kind of works like a pendulum, where you'd kind of need to say, okay, show me boy, show me girl, and then you could do the test.
That's smart.
And that way you would know kind of what it's programmed to do. But, I mean, maybe you would also sort of sway it, because you might be like, show me boy, show me girl, I really want a boy, so I'm going to kind of move it just a little bit, So maybe that's why they don't, I don't know. But that's the only one I remember administering during my wife's pregnancy or anybody else's pregnancy for the gender. I mean, there were a lot of people that talked about where you carry the baby being an indicator.
Yeah. High is supposed to be a girl, and carrying low is supposed to be a boy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why for either of those. I guess it's just one of those things.
I don't know. Girls are lighter and fluffier. I don't know.
Maybe. Let's see. Another one that I found really interesting is that if you, some pregnant women look beautiful and they have a healthy glow, and, that's supposed to be a boy, but if you're, breaking out and your hair's greasier than normal and all that other stuff, it's supposed to be a girl because she's stealing your beauty.
See,
and I've heard that one a lot.
Yeah. And the idea of, stealing the beauty, that there's a lot of this stuff that I think emphasizes the idea that the baby kind of is consciously influencing you.
Yeah, or that what you do influences, how the baby looks, or...
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get to some of the things about, things that the mom can do, mm-hmm. changing the baby. But, I mean, even just in the gender determination, it's sort of the baby chooses to sit high, or, the baby causes these kind of cravings, so therefore it must be this gender or that gender. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and I've noticed, too, that, a lot of pregnant women will say, the baby really wants Chinese food. It's mm-hmm. not... They put a lot on the baby. I just think that's funny to me.
There's definitely a kind of the devil made me do it approach.
Yeah, a little bit. But it's... I don't know it's so much, it's a conscious thing, but, a baby is a parasite. If you're not really getting, what you should be getting, the baby will take it from your body.
Like calcium.
Yeah. Especially. A lot of people will say, if you're going to start trying, get your teeth fixed, get all that under control, because your teeth just get so bad with all that.
They rot out of your skull. It's
basically, I've heard a lot of women who had a lot of trouble with dental stuff afterwards. But anyway, so I think that's interesting that maybe it's a coping mechanism for that parasitic relationship, because that's really what it is.
Yeah. So if you have to blame the baby for it, at least you can blame it for making you want the stuff you really want to eat anyway. So, no, I remember, when my wife was pregnant, it was cookie runs at any hour of the day or the night when it was our boy. So, mm-hmm.
See, it's funny. I've always had an enormous sweet tooth. Oh my God, sugar, 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 cookies, ice cream. It doesn't matter. Cake, pie. Oh my God, I love sweet stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But since I got the nausea around week 5,
mm-hmm.
I've wanted really nothing to do with it. I just recently started eating sweets again, and it's not even that I'm craving them, sometimes I'll just be like, you know, that would sound good. That's a little bit of a dessert. Like, for example, we got Girl Scout cookies, mm-hmm. and Thin Mints are my jam. I love me some Thin Mints. And I still have a box sitting downstairs. Like, usually I'm done with them in, like, a week. And we've had them for a while, and I'll eat a couple, and then I'm done. And that is unheard of for me, especially with Thin Mint cookies. That's so just... I really have not been wanting sweet stuff.
You don't even know how to eat Girl Scout cookies, do you?
What are you talking about?
Like you have a box downstairs. Is it even in your freezer?
No, I don't do that.
What's wrong with you?
My husband does, with tagalongs, but I do not.
Whatever.
Am I dead to you?
Yeah. That's me washing my hands of you. No, you're supposed to freeze them and then eat a sleeve of them at a time.
See, that's, seriously, though, that would be what I would used to do with a big glass of milk. And, you know, again, like, two or three right now with milk sounds really good.
Right.
But I do not want a ton of sweet stuff. What I've been craving is Thai food.
Spicy?
I don't really like spicy. I just want curry. I want that yellow curry with pineapple and mango and carrots and peppers. Oh my god, it just sounds so good right now. And all that rice.
Mm-hmm. That's a girl. That's a girl. I'm just telling you, from our experience, like our boy, it was a lot of sweet stuff. And that's actually counterintuitive to, like, from some of the lore I've read, they say sweet stuff tends to be a girl. And, you know, mm-hmm. if you think about sugar and spice and everything nice, that would make sense.
Right.
It's but,
sour for a boy, is what they say. I hate sour stuff.
Yeah, sour for a boy. But I've also found there's some places where it says sweet for a boy, too. And for us, that was very true. Sugar constantly for our boy. For our girl, constant cravings for spicy Thai food and spicy Indian food.
Yeah, Indian sounds good, too. Just curry. I don't care. Yep. Just give me curry.
So, girl, what's your jabbing?
See, that's what I think, honestly. So we shall see, but that's what I think. Okay, what next? Oh, I wanted to say I did do the wedding ring swing, mm-hmm. but I did it over my stomach, not my palm. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of that iteration. And it swung in a circle, which I took to mean girl. But again, I've heard the other way as well.
Yeah. I think everybody else is wrong and we're right, so...
I think so, too.
We're safe. That won't piss anybody off, right? So.
Oh, goodness. Okay, this is more of a modern one.
Yes, tell me about this. I'm fascinated by this.
Okay. What you're supposed to do is take half a cup of Drano. And then, because this will give off fumes. Again, let me reiterate, we are not doctors. Honestly, I do not think this test is worth it. I do not think anyone should do this. However, some people do. They will then pee into a separate cup,
mm-hmm.
then go outside and mix those because it will go off fumes that are toxic. It is not good for you. Don't do the Drano test if you're pregnant. But again, some people do. They think, I mean, and you know, if you're well ventilated and you're wearing a mask or whatever, they think it's fine. I will not be doing this. If you do and you risked it, and that's fine. Or maybe they aren't toxic. Maybe I'm making that up, but they would seem toxic to me. but it says to be very careful. So anyway,
you know, when you think about the fact that there's a lot of things that they say, like you can't even touch certain essential oils. Like you can't touch these essential oils when you're pregnant because it mm-hmm. might induce. And you're like, no, you can handle a half a cup of Drano. That's fine. Like, that seems, like, highly counterintuitive.
Right. So, you mix your urine into the Drano, you know, a step back from the fumes. Well, whatever color it turns is supposed to be indicative of gender. And I've seen, like, I actually did research on this, like, people who said they took this test, and green was girl, and blue was boy. But here's the thing. The colors are very, very similar.
Mm.
So, I don't know. Like, green can also be kind of like moving towards yellow or like a browny color. And then there's blue, but it can also be a bluey green that's still technically a blue. I don't know. I don't think it's worth it to do. But it is something that's out there that people do. And I just thought it'd be interesting to talk about.
So that's
definitely more of a modern one.
That's crazy. That's like, that just reminds me of like the way they used to determine pregnancy was that they would the rabbit test, yeah, but you'd have to kill a rabbit to be able to if you were pregnant, the rabbit would die, you know.
Yep. But the thing is it would die anyway because you'd have to like cut it open to see, how it reacted. Like, I forget the exacts of it, but they actually talked about it on this Downton Abbey podcast that I listened to. Up yours downstairs? Oh. I don't know. I'm sure we have overlap that people listen to that too, if there are any Downton Abbey watchers. But they talked about that because they do, like, historical talks that go in with what's going on in Downton Abbey.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just like a recap, it's also a little bit of a history lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So they talked about that in there. I thought that was crazy. But I wonder why rabbits.
It has something to do with the hormones. But yeah, like, and we were talking about American Horror Story Asylum earlier tonight, and they mentioned the rabbit test in that one too.
Oh yeah, they do.
Yeah, so it's very strange. Like, all these, like, very weird rituals surrounding pregnancy, which seem, like, you know, play with Drano, kill a rabbit. Like, that seems slightly pagan in some ways, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But whatever. So there's the Drano test, which is kind of a modern one. Another one, it's not modern, it's actually probably fairly ancient, but very different, that I had never really heard of, was the Chinese birth chart.
Yeah, this one's pretty fascinating to me. So you put in your age at conception, and then the month that you conceived, and it gives you boy or girl. There's some discrepancy where it's your age, or it could actually mean your lunar age, which is usually a couple of years older.
Okay.
I think, or maybe it's a little bit younger because of the moon cycles.
Right, because how many moons old are you? Like, right. There's 13 moons per each year, theoretically, so. But that doesn't add up to 365 days consistently, so.
Right.
No, I follow
so,
you.
So I did this. There's actually one. It's, and you can Google it. It's right there. But yeah. So I get girl with that one, and I talked to my mom about it because, you know, we've been talking about, oh, I wonder what it's gonna be, and we did the birth chart with hers, with all three of, you know, her children, me and my two brothers,
mm-hmm.
and 100% correct every time.
Hmm.
So I'm wondering if that turns out to be right for me.
Yeah, you had me do it, and it was. Mm-hmm. It was right on the first one, but the second one was wrong, but I'm not 100% sure I got the conception date right, so it could be slightly off, so.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's, I don't know, it's just interesting. It's very interesting to think about.
Yeah. Because, again, while you have a 50% chance, from what I've seen, it is more than 50% accurate. Like, obviously it's not 100%, but, so it just...
Right.
It's like, what do they know that we don't know?
They will rule us all. But yeah, no, that's. I think it's an interesting test, and I mean, it's one. Like I said, I hadn't really heard of it before, so I'd be interested to know more. If somebody else has some more expertise in that, I would love to hear more on that.
Yeah.
All right. So, what are some of the other? Another kind of modern one that you'd mentioned to me was the heart rate.
Yeah, they say if your heart rate is high, which is usually high is considered like 140 or over, it's a girl, and lower than that is a boy. But I've absolutely heard that debunked on various forums that I've been on. You know, oh, well, mine was 150 and it was a boy, and, you know, mine was 120 and it was a girl, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's been sitting pretty high, so again, that points to girl.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Yeah, I'm getting the impression girl from everything that we've had, so that of course means that it will be a boy. Because realistically, that's the only true indication, is whatever you think it's going to be, it's going to surprise you, so.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know. I've had two dreams about it being a girl, so I wonder if they'll be prophetic or not.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, so for our firstborn, we decided not to find out the gender until he was born. We know what it is now, but we figured that one out.
Well, you know the sex. You don't know. I mean...
Right.
Something a little different later on, right?
Right. That's
you
true.
You never know.
That's true. Yeah. Whatever he goes with, we're fine. We love him.
Right.
He's adorable. So, but for right now, he seems to be identifying as a he, and that was that was what he came with. So, so that's where we're going for right now. But yeah, so we didn't know what you know what sex he was going to be when he was born. And I think we did like some of the little folksy tests, and I think most of them indicated boy. But then, like, I don't know. It was just one of those things where, like, I wouldn't have been surprised either way, and I wasn't committed to either one. There was something kind of neat about that. So
yeah, I mean, I do intend to find out, obviously, but I will be very happy either way. And I know a lot of people say, "Oh, as long as it's healthy," and I don't really mean that. I mean, definitely, I want it to be healthy, but I'm genuinely excited for different aspects of raising a different, you know, a girl or a boy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. It's very interesting and exciting. Either
you go to the beach.
Yeah. And they have their very distinct challenges. So. And they also have their very distinct rewards. Like, they're both very, very different in their ways of relating to me, and I love that. But that could also just be, you know, who they are too. So
yeah, that's true.
You never know. It's life is like a box of chocolates, you know. So
okay,
so
this one I had not heard before I did a search for some of these. Sympathy symptoms from the spouse indicates a girl is what they say.
Okay,
which my husband has been rock solid this whole time, except for this past weekend. I was doing something, and I was like, you know, are you about ready to go get lunch? And he was like, oh, we were going to sign our tax stuff. And he was like, I need KFC. And I was like, what? Because we never eat at KFC, ever. And he's like, I just want a big bucket of chicken. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I can get something there. And then, as we're coming back, he was like, no, I changed my mind. I really want Taco Bell. I was like, I think you're experiencing some sympathy cravings.
Yeah.
It was so cute. He was like, I need them. I need them bad. Oh, goodness. So, again, that points to girl. We shall see.
It's interesting. Well, I mean, I think I had... I don't think I had sympathy symptoms with either one, but I definitely sympathy ate everything she did.
I was about to say, did you sympathy weight gain?
Yes, I did a little bit. Working on that now, so
yeah,
that is not a fun aspect of it in any way.
No, but
you know it happens, and you know you move on.
True.
You get a gym membership, you do some push-ups, it's all good. So. So, anyway, were there any other... Oh, you have one more, looks like.
Yeah, this one is ridiculous to me. If you're, like, really sick in your first trimester, supposedly it's a girl. And it's funny, because I was hoping that I could say, oh, I've been told this one. My aunt told me this one. When I told her how sick I'd been, she said, oh, it's a girl. I was completely sick with both of my... Because she has two boys and two girls.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I've been so sick with my girls. And I was like, oh, okay, I'd never heard that before. But apparently it is an old wives' tale. And, but again, you know, in all the forums, oh, I was sick as a dog, and I'm having a boy. And so, again, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's funny how that developed. I wonder why that indicates a girl.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think my wife was more sick with our second one, but I don't know, so... But then maybe there's some validity to it, maybe not.
Maybe.
I don't know. What do you think about the ones, so, you know, just before we move off of the gender predicting topic, what do you think about some of the lore surrounding, instead of gender predicting, gender controlling, where, like, say that you're trying to conceive or whatever, one of the things I've heard is, like, you can put a frying pan under the bed if you want a girl, or you can put a knife under the bed if you want a boy while you're trying to conceive.
Oh.
And like, if you eat a lot of salty foods right before you try, that will give you a boy. Or if you use a vinegar douche before you try, it will give you a boy.
No, I've actually... Again, I'm not a doctor. I could be completely messing this up. So if I am, I sincerely apologize. Just think I'm stupid and move on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, the whole area has a acidity, like a pH balance, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if it's more acidic, I've heard that like tends towards girl because it kills the slower sperm, which carry the male gene.
Right.
Or the male, like,
the
chromosome.
Y chromosome, yeah.
So, like, I've heard, again, this could be wrong, I've heard, like, female sperm, or, you know, the ones carrying double X,
uh-huh.
are, faster, but not as hardy, mm-hmm. and boys are slower, but, you know, stronger, like, they last a little bit longer.
Hmm.
So, I don't know.
So the vinegar thing sounds like it might make more sense. Or maybe even the salty, because if you did the salt, maybe that would affect the body chemistry.
Yeah, I'm not sure how, like, all that acidic and base and how that balances out. I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that's what they're kind of, what this is trying to, is lending itself to.
That's science learning. We don't do that on this show. Science.
I'm sure there's some scientist who's like, this is like basic chemistry. Come on.
I'm sure Kathleen.
Sorry, I took a lot of English, okay?
I'm sure Kathleen on Borealis Meditations is just banging her head against her computer,
sorry.
Being like, don't you understand the principles of base and acid?
No, I don't.
We
I'm
don't.
Sorry.
We're terrible. So anyway. So, okay, well, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we can move from the gender predicting to some of the, you know, old wives' tales and folklore about actual, like, things that happen during pregnancy and
okay.
you know, childbirth. Okay?
Sounds good.
Cool.
Our God is an awesome God. Much better than that ridiculous God that Desert Bluffs has. Welcome to Night Vale. A blinking light up on the mountain. It is red. Blinking lights are always red. It still broadcasts a monotone female voice, reading out seemingly random numbers, interspersed with chimes, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They would like to remind everyone that dogs are not allowed in the dog park. People are not allowed in the dog park. It is possible you will see hooded figures in the dog park. Do not approach them. And much like Madeline LaFleur, head of Night Vale's tourism board, I will now control the one part of my life that is under my control. Let us go now, and I do hope we come back to the weather.
Welcome to Night Vale is a production of Commonplace Books. Check out commonplacebooks.com for more information on this show.
Good night, Night Vale. Good night.
Do you have questions about American root work?
Have you ever heard of mojo bags or conditioning oils and haven't a clue what they do? Or perhaps just felt a call to conjure?
Well, grab a lamp and strike a light and follow us to the crossroads. I'm Dr. Hobb, a journeyman Memphis conjure doctor.
And I'm Silver Shadow, a Chicago area Strega witch beginning his journey into root work.
So join us for Lamplighter Blues, where we'll be shining a light at the crossroads of American hoodoo, conjure, and root work.
All right, so, and we're back. I'm sure everybody wants to have a fairly easy childbirth if you're having a baby. So, there's a lot of, like, really weird trick. Try this one weird old trick.
Doctors hate her.
And that's New World Witchery clickbait for you. So there's a lot of stuff that goes around, like, how you make the childbirth itself easier or less painful or things like that. One of the most interesting ones I saw was that you wash your thighs in dishwater every day, and that helps give you an easy birth.
Ew.
Yeah.
Like dirty dishwater?
That would be what that seems like it is, yeah.
Not I really wouldn't sure. want to do that. Maybe my dishes are, like, way dirtier than some people's, but...
Yeah, I think like maybe in the old days you would have like your soak side of the sink.
That's
and you have
true.
Your
we
rinse
did used to do
side
that before
of the sink.
I had a dishwasher.
Right, and so then maybe this is like the rinse dishwater where it's mostly clean with, you know, suds and stuff in it.
Yeah, maybe a little gray.
Yeah. So there's that one, and that was just an interesting one I'd heard of that I thought was, you know.
I've never heard that.
It's from Southern folklore, and it's, I think it's also in African-American folklore in some places as well. So.
Hmm.
Okay, so what are some other... one that I think a lot of people know is you put an axe or a knife under the bed during the childbirth and it cuts the pain.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that on mm-hmm. our magical occupations one because we did touch on midwifery there.
Yes. So that one's there. But one thing I read in sort of looking back over some of the notes for the show was that you are supposed to put those under the bed, but as soon as the baby is born, you have to remove them. Because mm-hmm. if you don't, you run the risk of bleeding out.
Oh, yeah.
So it's very interesting, like, the sort of rituals that go along with that. It's very specific. So.
Yeah, another one would be untying all the knots. Again, we've touched on that before. So, you know, if there's even a knot in a cord for blinds, mm-hmm. you know, you untie that. I guess untie your shoes and
yeah, you know, you're supposed to, yeah, and even if your hair is pulled up, you're supposed to let your hair down.
Mm-hmm.
So anything like that. And it's interesting because there's another tradition, this is another African-American folklore tradition, where if you tie, during the pregnancy, you have a red flannel string tied around the waist of the mother, and that's supposed to lend strength to the mother during childbirth. So, but at the time of delivery, you're supposed to untie the string.
Hmm.
So, that's another aspect of that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I think that's interesting. Like, the untying, the cutting, the, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's just sort of about easing and releasing.
Yeah, releasing. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's very big. I'm trying to think if there's anything else about, like, ways that you make the delivery easier. I mean, we live in a really interesting era because even 20 years ago, a lot of the stuff that's kind of come into vogue again, that's based on a lot of older practices, would have been looked at as sort of quackery, and, you know, the medical establishment would have been like, no, you can't, water birth, what's wrong with you? You know? look, what, you know, are you living on a commune? What's going on? You know, but home births were treated the same way. But I think now, I'm not saying that it's a totally mainstream and fully accepted by every obstetrician kind of a thing, but, you know, the hospital where we delivered, it was a hospital, and they had a midwife program that you worked with.
Right.
And so I think it's become more acceptable. And so there's a lot more emphasis on, like, some of these older traditional ways being used to, you know, help the mother through pregnancy, like, you know, neonatal massage and things like that are a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, what about you? What are your experiences so far with that?
Well, I'm with an OB, but I feel kind of stupid because I thought that, like, you know, you went to your OBGYN.
Mm-hmm.
But you also had, like, a midwife. I didn't realize it was kind of, like, one or the other type of thing when I got pregnant. And then after I realized that, I had already chosen an OB. And I'm really happy with her. She's been great so far, and she has a lot of the same, like, ideas that, you know, she's not induction happy, which I was really worried about.
Yeah.
And that's really why I wanted a midwife, was because they are okay with letting you go a little bit longer. But, you know, you don't hit your due date and they're like, okay, let's get this baby out of you.
Right.
And, you know,
not baby
they're
factory.
Not so, oh, let's pump you full of Pitocin and, okay, epidural time. You know, like, I'm not saying, oh, I'm going to have a natural childbirth. It's going to be perfect, because it's not.
Right.
I absolutely know that things will change. Things will go wrong. Things will not be how I expect. And that's okay. I've already come to terms with that. However, I want to try to do things to the best of my ability the way that nature intended.
Mm-hmm.
However, I take a Tylenol when my head hurts if it's really killing me. I'm not opposed to, you know, certain medical interventions.
Right. Particularly,
you know what I mean?
You know, yeah, particularly. I mean, if there's a life-threatening issue, of course you're going to, you know.
Oh, definitely. My mom almost died with my younger brother.
Yeah.
you know, without medical intervention, she would not be here, and he would not be here.
Right.
So, you know, I'm definitely not against that. But, yeah, like I said, I want to try to do it naturally, but I have absolutely no delusions about the things that could go wrong, or even that I may just not be able to handle the pain. I may say, okay, you know what, I'm done. Let's do an epidural, you know?
Right.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
So, I certainly don't begrudge anybody who wants to do that.
Sure. Yeah, actually, in you know, speaking to your point about the obstetrician midwife thing.
Yeah, sorry, I totally got sidetracked there.
No, that's fine. No, because I mean, I think we're going to have a lot of people who are interested in kind of the ideas and the topics, and the people who either haven't had children and are, you know, thinking about it for the first time, or who have and, you know, are interested in kind of seeing what the current state of affairs is.
Yeah.
And our midwives were, you know, we had one dedicated midwife for us, but then the entire team got to know us as well, just in case any of them were going to be delivering. But there was an obstetrician who had supervisory capacity over their unit.
Mm-hmm.
So we had technically an obstetrician as well. It's just that the midwives did almost everything else, and the obstetrician
right.
just kind of showed up and signed paperwork, checked vital signs and things like that every once in a while. But
right. Well, I do feel like even probably 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
It was treated so much more as a, this is a medical condition, you know.
Yes.
This is, you need to be in the hospital for this, and, you know, there is something wrong. And
yeah.
It's not wrong. It's completely normal. Women have been doing it for years and years.
Yes.
And I really feel like it's kind of swinging back the other way, and a lot of doctors are a lot more open to, like I said, you know, letting you go a little bit past your due date, because it's not an exact thing, you know.
Right.
And, and not being so induction happy. And a lot of places now are doing delayed cord clamping, which is something I'm looking into, because, you know, at least until it stops pulsing, because they say, and I don't know if this falls under the old wives' tales or not, but it's still delivering blood to the baby, and if you cut it really quickly, it has a much higher chance of being jaundiced.
Mm.
So if you wait just a little bit, let it stop pulsing, and then cut the cord, then, you know, it seems to be better for the baby. And then there are also a lot of hospitals now are doing, like, skin-to-skin contact immediately and
yeah.
leaving the baby on for, like, at least an hour before they do anything. And I'm really glad. You know, I'm glad things are turning around a little bit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, our skin, that was a big thing for us, is that if there was any way to do skin-to-skin, we wanted skin-to-skin pretty quickly afterwards, and
yeah.
so we got that with both of ours. Now, we didn't have, like, a full hour, but we had a few minutes where it was skin-to-skin before they would take the baby and wash off all the baby goop.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that, and it's really nice. It is this thing where we've swung back in a direction of, I don't know, it's kind of the best of both worlds right now, because, I mean, while women have been doing this for, you know, thousands and thousands of years, you know, in a lot of cases they've been doing it and dying, or having children die.
That's very true.
So there is, you know, there is a side of it that's like, well, there is a benefit to the medical side being being present there too. I just
Absolutely.
Don't think that we should
completely agree, and I hope I don't sound like I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good to have both options. And here's another thing that I think is really interesting. In a lot of, like, the folklore that I explore about this, one of the things I think is really fascinating is there is an unspoken but very, very present attitude that the people who can best serve women during those moments are women. And so there's a very strong, like, that's, you know, midwives and doulas and, you know, that it's a woman's mystery, it's a woman's thing, and that men have a very minimal role in that. And I'm not saying that's necessarily should be universally true. I really, really appreciated being there. My wife did. We were going to do water birth, but we actually wanted to do kind of shower birth. And in both cases, like, I was there to help support her and hold her up in that shower while she was laboring. And it was very, it's one of the things I will remember until I die, because it was very powerful to me. It meant something very different to me. But at the same time, it is a woman's mystery. It's a woman's thing. And I think men have to be willing to kind of acknowledge the sacredness of that and respect that. So, such is my opinion. I'm sure other people disagree.
I like that. That's a good point.
Yeah, I don't think that there's no place for men in this process. I just think that men need to acknowledge that this, you know, This is not the time to get involved in gender politics and start, like, staking claims on,
right,
on things.
Well, there's this this show that comes on Channel 4 on the BBC, uh-huh, which I found on YouTube. Mm-hmm. It's called One Born Every Minute, and mm-hmm, it's about these. They set up cameras all over this labor ward, but it's all midwives.
Mm.
And, I mean, they do have, you know, some OBs kind of on call, but it's mainly midwives who are delivering. There is one midwife there who is a male, and they focus on him for one episode and, like, the baby he's helping deliver. And he said, you know, he was young, like maybe 12 or so, and he was there for his sister's, for when she gave birth. And he thought it was fascinating, and it just really moved him, and that he wanted to be a midwife, and he was. And he was, what they showed of him, he was really great with his patients. He's like, you're doing it, it's great, you know. And I just thought that was fascinating, because I've never, ever heard of a male midwife. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, would that be a mid-husband? I mean,
I don't know.
We call it animal husbandry when we're...
It's true.
When we're delivering calves and stuff. But anyway, I just thought that was really interesting. That's a good point. You know, it's a really womanly dominated field in the midwife aspect.
Yes.
But OBs, I feel like, are still a lot of men.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's becoming more equal in that area.
Definitely. But again, let's say 10 years ago, you know.
Yeah.
Especially 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah. But I mean, and again, I really am not saying, like, there's no place for men. And I just, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I want, as a man, I want to appreciate with gratitude and humility any time I get in that space.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, I don't think you're saying, oh, men can't be in the room or anything like that.
Right. They should be pacing in the lobby with cigars. You know, that's, that's the man's role with a hat, you know?
Right.
But no, you know, I just think it's very interesting that we've kind of moved in a direction that's, you know, it's embracing that aspect of it. And, you know, you brought up the point earlier about it being treated as a disease almost in some, mm-hmm, medical establishments. You know, I work a lot in HR. I do. That's basically what I do. And, you know, there's this thing called the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, that has to do with, like, discrimination and, like, mm-hmm, how you treat your employees and everything like that based on gender and medical condition. For the purposes of the ADA, pregnancy is considered a disability.
Yep.
And it's very interesting. And that, like, I mean, I think in the context of the ADA, it makes sense because you're trying to protect the rights of pregnant women. So, like, oh, you're pregnant, you're fired, because you're not going to be here in 9 months. So.
Right. Or even, you know, I have a physically demanding job. I can no longer carry 50-pound boxes.
Right.
You know, you can't dock my pay because of that or something like that.
Right, like you have to make reasonable accommodations and things like that for me. Yeah, and I think that's great. I think that's wonderful. But I think it's very interesting that it's still couched in that mentality of disability.
Mm-hmm.
So that's small ranting on one side. Speaking of weird disabilities, what about PICA?
Oh, yeah, this is a weird one. I've not experienced this. But PICA is eating things that are not food, basically, right?
Yeah,
like,
and I mean,
obsessively, almost like obsessive compulsively.
Right, and it can vary. Like, and people tend to think of it as dirt eating, and that's one of the things that I've seen people, or I've heard of people doing, is they'll eat dirt when they're pregnant, and supposedly they think it's the iron. They're trying to get iron in their system.
Yeah,
but it can be as mild as something like ice. Like, if you just crave ice all the time.
Hmm. But I mean, that's still, technically, that's edible, though, you know?
It is.
I mean, technically, dirt is, a lot of things are edible that we shouldn't eat.
Right.
But, like, you know, I've heard of, like, people with PICA even, like, eating glass, and this is not just pregnancy, this is just right. People with PICA.
Right, but pregnancy, in American history, for some reason, there's actually a fairly strong tendency towards PICA. Mm-hmm. Not, like, universally, but there's a slightly higher percentage of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, again, I think a lot of cravings are really just what your body is needing.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows what I'm getting out of curry, but but that's really what I've wanted. So, yeah, I think sometimes, like, there was, again, you know, I've been on all kinds of forums and stuff, and this got brought up, and someone said, like, their sister really wanted to eat a plant. Like, she asked her OB, she was like, you know, would it be okay if I ate my palm tree at home or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor was like, you know, you probably shouldn't do that. Ate it anyway, you know? Ate, like, leaves off the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Like, her potted plant. And, yeah, I mean, it said it tasted kind of bad, but it satisfied the craving. So, I don't know. It's very odd. But, again, I really think you're missing something, and your mind kind of overrides.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like, how compulsive it is, because it's, like, from what I've read, is that the people who have it, especially in certain cases like you're talking about with this plant, they know they shouldn't do it, but they're doing it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to the software of the brain is overriding any commands that the brain is making, saying don't do this thing.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. Speaking of cravings, one of the most interesting pieces of lore that I see pop up over and over and over again in American lore is things about cravings leaving birthmarks on the baby. So, like, say you have a craving for strawberries and you don't eat strawberries, then your baby will have a birthmark the shape of a strawberry.
Hmm.
And likewise, if you get scared by something while you're pregnant, that will leave a birthmark on the baby in the shape of whatever scared you.
That's... Yeah, I feel like I've heard that a little bit, but not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, because I don't have any birthmarks, but my youngest brother does. On his leg.
Hmm. What is it shaped like? Can you say?
Just an oval. Just kind of circular.
Egg. You should see if your mom was craving eggs.
I don't know. Maybe.
Interesting. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's just an interesting piece of folklore.
Yeah, definitely.
And so then, okay, so then let's talk a little bit about, so we've gotten through, you know, predicting the gender, we've gotten through, you know, basically right up to the baby's born. I talked a little bit about, you know, the cord, but let's talk a little bit about other things that are, what, about the luggage the baby's carrying with it when it comes out. Let's just call
okay.
it that.
Let's so talk about the placenta.
The placenta and the call.
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about the call first.
Yeah.
So, I think a lot of people have heard this, if you're born with the call, like even half over your face or completely over, then your baby will be psychic or have some sort of psychic ability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I mean, and it was so, but it also means that you will never die by drowning. That's another one I've heard with that.
Oh, I've never heard that.
And it was so, such a strong belief, in early American history, it was such a strong belief that midwives would actually steal the calls after the baby was born.
Wow.
And go sell them to sailors. So if a sailor
That's
had that,
really
they wouldn't
cool.
die by drowning.
I didn't know that.
Yes. So, like, the baby would get to be psychic and never drown. So it's kind of like a superpower.
Wow.
It's kind of
cool. Can I stop you for a second? Is that thunder that I'm hearing in the background?
Yes.
Wow. It's, like, super loud.
Oh. Sorry.
No, you can't help it. I mean, or can you?
you're the one with those
crazy.
Powers.
And I finally saw lightning over here, too. It, like, lit up the whole room.
Yeah. It's pretty intense.
Getting intense. Okay, yep. Anyway, sorry. I was just checking to make sure it wasn't, like, a rolly chair or something, because it seriously sounds like one.
Nope, that's the angels bowling, so.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so, another thing with the the placenta.
Okay.
A lot of people nowadays will eat the placenta for health.
Yes, and I should, let's rephrase that a little bit. In the olden days, many people ate the placenta for health.
Okay, and it is coming back into vogue now.
Yes, because there was, you know, there's definitely a period of time where, no, we didn't do that, but now it's coming back. Cat Ironwood of Lucky Mojo is a huge advocate for eating the placenta, and she insists that, you know, you eat it raw and you eat it fresh.
So, what is this supposed to do, like, for health? What does that mean?
It's supposed to provide a huge number of nutrients to the mother's body that she needs right away, like, to rebuild her strength so that she can nurse the baby and give the baby strength, too. And it also provides, I think it may also provide some immunities as well, early on. At least, this is the lore around. I don't know if there's any medical science behind it or not. What I do know for sure, from living on a farm, is that pretty much any animal that gave birth on our farm would eat its placenta afterwards.
Yes, yes. We had a dog that whelped, and, yeah, she cleaned up everything.
Yep.
oh, so disgusting at the time to me. But yeah, I mean, that's normal. That's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't look pleasant, you know, as it's being done. But I mean, clearly there's a biological imperative surrounding it for whatever reason.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of it like that. But yeah, you're right.
And there's been a trend. Actually, this may be going a little too far with it. There's been a trend where some people will, after they have the birth, they'll save the placenta. They'll have it wrapped up and put in a refrigerator thing. And when they get home, they'll have they'll cook it, and they'll have guests over, and everybody can try the placenta. So it's sort of like a community, like the family can all have the placenta together.
If I am eating placenta, it is only going to be my own.
Yes.
Let's put that out there right now.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole, like, other people eating your placenta feels a little, I don't know, feels a little, one, cannibal-y, and two, violate-y. Like, it seems like it intrudes upon personal space. But that being said, that's my opinion. If you're out there and you've been to placenta party and it was awesome, that's totally cool.
It's just one of those things. No judges here, but, yeah.
It's just one of those things that, like, I can't see myself doing it because my mental blocks around it are strong.
Right.
So.
Same here.
One thing. Okay. I do love, one piece of placenta lore I love is the planting the placenta under a tree.
This one's pretty new to me. I've not really heard about this one.
Oh, okay. So I should probably talk about it then.
Yes, you should.
So this is also from Southern lore and African American lore, but I think it goes back further than that. But you take the placenta, and there's actually a huge, like, fairly complicated procedure around this where you pick what's called a naming tree, where you try to pick a certain kind of tree. Like, so you say, for example, that you wanted your child to be sweet. Well, you might choose a birch or a maple, because those produce syrup.
Oh.
Right? So you'll choose these sweet things. Or an elm is very tall and strong, but the bark is very smooth, so that means that they're not going to be deformed, and it means that they're also going to be they're not going to be rough on the outside. They're not going to be difficult to love. They'll just be very strong. So you might plant it under an elm. And then you name that tree for your child. So the tree and your child share the name. And then you take the first bath water from the child, and you use that to water the tree. And then every year you come back and you give a little something to the tree or whatever. And that tree, as it grows and flourishes, so does your child grow and flourish. And because most trees tend to live longer than people, then you're sort of ensuring the lifespan of the child that way.
Yeah, I like that. But my mind goes to horrible places. What if it gets knocked over in like a storm or something?
Right, gets struck by lightning. Yeah, that means your child's gonna die. That's
mean,
it. That's
like,
the end for you.
Does it connect them like that in the lore, or
it's supposed? I mean, that supposedly it's a sympathetic thing, and I don't. I've never read anything where it says that, you know, the child will definitely die when the tree is struck by lightning. But I have read things where it talks about, like, that means there's something bad coming for the child, and you can use it as sort of a sign or a predictor.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah. So.
Last thing with placentas. Have you heard of lotus births?
I've heard the term, but I don't remember what it is. What is that?
Okay, this is when you do not cut the cord. You leave the placenta and the cord attached to the baby until, like, you know, like when you cut the cord and the stump falls off later?
Right.
You keep the placenta with the baby until the whole thing falls off. So, okay. Like, you can search on Etsy, like, lotus bags, lotus covers, maybe?
Uh-huh.
And they make these things that cover, like, hold the placenta, cover the cord, you know, up to a certain length, and it's kept on the baby until it rots off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know. I think it's kind of like the same idea that I was talking about earlier with cord clamping and delaying that.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, they think it should be done naturally and, you know, until the, like, it's ready to come off, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I'm not positive. I've not really researched it because it's not something I would do, but it is there. That's something to talk about, at least.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. I read in a book about Blackfoot Native American practices. She was talking about some of the birth lore practices for her grandmother and her mother, and it talked about during one birth, they cut the cord too close and too soon, and it wound up getting air into the baby's stomach, and the baby died. So, like, I can see, you know, and I think for both of our kids, we let, you know, it wasn't, like, immediately cut. It was, like, let it sit for a minute or two, give it a little bit of time to stop pumping, and once it kind of got to a still, where it was kind of still, that's when they would clamp and cut. So, and I mean, part of the reason, you know, I don't have a strong opinion about the lotus birth aspect of it one way or the other, other than that I don't, as a new parent, I don't really want the responsibility of caring for that, too.
Right.
Like, that's just an extra thing to worry about. So, for me, right. That's... I don't know. But I do know that we were trying to preserve cord blood. So, I don't think you could do that if you did a lotus birth.
I don't think you can either.
Yeah.
I don't think you can actually do delayed clamping if you're going to preserve cord blood either.
They let us do it till stop pulsing. Maybe they don't consider that delayed clamping.
I don't know.
So...
No, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, they clamp it in two places, so maybe there's some reason, like, maybe they can take it from within the clamp space or something.
Oh, maybe. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Anything else?
I think that's it. You know, we thought about, you know, talking a little bit about the post-birth and, like, teething practices and milk production and all that. I think that all could probably be saved for another episode, maybe, with the fertility stuff. So.
Yeah.
This one has definitely been very, very full of very many things.
Very fascinating. We've both learned something.
Every day is a school day, as you have phrased it to me. So yeah, I think that's about it.
Yeah.
What do we have going on? What's coming up? We've talked about some of our announcements and some of the things that are happening in our lives. You're having a baby, apparently. So, that's happening.
You know, yeah. That old thing.
I'm moving several states away, also happening. Trying to think what else. Right now, I'm going to just do a shameless plug for something right now. Right now on Facebook, there's something where they're doing, it's like a witches conference sort of thing that'll be in New Orleans in 2015.
Aw, man.
Right.
Love me some New Orleans.
I know, and to be there, like, for witchy, and, like, and so the reason I know about it is Peter Padden is one of the people. It's this huge long list, and you can check as many people as you want, and basically you say, who would you like to see at this conference? So, you know, Peter Padden sent it out, and he's one of the ones on the list, and so I checked him and several of the other people I know on there that I'd be interested in seeing at this conference. But there is a space for other, where you can just click it and write in who you would like to see there. So I have sent out a request, if anybody's interested, to write in. I just said Corey at New World Witchery for right now, because I didn't want to speak for you.
I appreciate that.
But, you know, how do you feel about it?
When would it be?
In 2015.
Right, but do you know my month?
I don't. Not off the top of my head, no.
Maybe cutting it too close.
Yeah.
God, I'd love to go back to New Orleans, though.
I know. I tell you what, if they were asking me to be there, I would probably say, hey, I have this podcasting partner that should probably also be here, and we'll see what happens. But definitely, like, if you're, you know, just throwing this out there, if you're interested in seeing one or both of us doing some of these kind of, like, speaking events and stuff like that, or you know, coming out and, like, sharing our witchy with you, this is be a great way to kind of start that. So... Shameless plug.
That's cool. You have a lot of information, I feel like, that should be shared.
Well, thank
I mean,
you.
And obviously we do that with the podcast, but...
Yeah, and we do try to do it at Supermoots, too. Oh, that's another thing we'll talk about real quick.
Okay.
Supermoot. There is a Supermoot 5 going on this year. 5 or 4? 5. This is the 5th year. Supermoot 5 is going on. It's going to be in the Chicago area this year. Firelight has graciously accepted hosting responsibilities for this. We were tossing a couple of ideas around and trying to make a couple of different things work, and in the end we couldn't get enough to coalesce in any one area, and so finally I was like, Firelight, if it really comes down to it, would you be willing to do it? And he said, yes, definitely, just let me know what you need, and has been wonderful. So the weekend of Pagan Pride in Chicago, which is in September, we'll have dates and all that coming up fairly soon. There will be a Pagan Podcast Supermoot number 5 in Chicago. So be watching for information on that. I don't know if I'll be able to go this year. I'm still helping out behind the scenes a little bit. But with the move, I just don't know if I'll be there or not. So but more information.
I know I will not be able to.
Really, you think? Yeah, you'll either be about to pop or have just popped, so.
Yep.
So.
Oh, goodness.
So, yeah, alright, so, yeah. That's the shameless plug, that's the super moot. Anything else going on?
Not that I can think of, but.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, Lane, thank you so much. Really enjoyed talking about this with you. And
yeah, thanks for humoring my show idea.
I love it. This is really great. It's one of those things, like, we had both had enough information kind of in our heads that we could really go at this. So that's really fun.
Right.
So cool. Well, then I guess until next time, I just want to say, if you want to write to us, compassandkey@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook, New World Witchery, Twitter, NW Witchery. With the @ in front of it, and website is newworldwitchery.com. So there's all that. Cool.
Yep.
I guess until next time, thanks for listening.
Be well.